interviewing Aguinaldo Zamora, nicknamed Nayo, N-A-Y-O. And he's going to tell us, hopefully in English, slowly, the struggles that you have been involved in to bring justice to Mexican Americans in Comal County. So tell me whatever stories you want to tell me, whichever ones you remember. It doesn't matter what years, just tell me some stories.
Okay. I would like to cite with examples of pure discrimination that has been going on in this town for the last 150 years. One of my experiences as a newcomer to New Braunfels in the early 1950s, there were signs that would say, no Mexicans allowed at the PK Cafe. It was an old German tradition not to serve to Mexican Americans.
What was the name of the restaurant?
PK Cafe. Home PK.
PK, okay.
Cafe. And also the Y Cafe was another place where we were being served at the window, but we could not come into the place and get service. Yet the Mexican Americans labor were doing the cooking. So what they would do when the Negro wanted a hamburger, they would spit on the hamburger and give it to the Negro so he could eat it, have a better taste. So this has been going on for the last 150 years. My experience in this town was in the early 1955 when Mr. Henry B. Gonzalez, who was an alderman in San Antonio, was thrown out of Camp Warnicky. He was told that he could not get service at Camp Warnicky swimming pool. So then I became the president of the local Lula Council 155 in 1959. By 1960, we wanted to test Camp Warnicky swimming pool and playground and beer joint. So we sent three members of LULAC to investigate the matter. They were served one beer by a good friend of mine, Mr. Johnny Snouts, and they were told that that was all the service they could get. Therefore, they questioned why, and they told them that Mr. Ray Bartram, state representative, would be in a place at 2:30 that afternoon. It was about 1:30 when that happened. So by 2:30, Mr. Raymond Bartram was waiting for him, and they were approached and they were stopped at the gate. They were told, I see you boys want to do some drinking around here. And said, yes, sir, we'd like to know why we were served one time and now we refuse service. They said, what are facing? The people from Dallas, from Houston, from Corpus, they do not want to mix with the Mexican-American people. So therefore, I suggest you boys do your drinking somewhere else. At the time, they were specifically asking Mr. Bartram if that was the reason they would refuse service. He goes, yes, that is the reason, because you are Mexican-American. You will not get served around here. So they left. So we had a resolution by LULAC, Council 155, and I happened to be at Mr. Ray Bartram's office as an interpreter for two Mexican-American families that had a dispute. So after the dispute, I was on Monday morning. The incident happened on Sunday, and Monday morning I was at his office, and we finished the business with his two ladies, and Mr. Bartram told me, Mr. Zamora, I would like to talk to you in private, and I want to know why the news media had called me this morning about the Camp Warnicky incident. I told him, okay, Mr. Bartram, you want to know why these people were refused service from Camp Warnicky? He said, I never told them that because they were Mexican Americans. Well, sir, let me tell you something else. Let me call the news media and tell them it wasn't you, it was a ghost that told them they were not welcome at Camp Warnicky. And then he asked me, by the way, Mr. Zamora, what is your title here? Who are you? And I told him, I'm just a local president of LULAC Council 155. But I tell you what, Mr. Bartram, I'm going to do two things before I leave your place of business. I have a son 1 year old, And if I have to fight discrimination all my life, I am willing and able to do it. Number two, I'm going to tell you something else, Mr. Bartram. We know that in 1962 you are running for state senator from the 19th senatorial district, and I guarantee you, you will not be our next senator. I got up and I went outside and I thought to myself, who am I to tell this man he will not be our next senatorial district senator? So then I answered myself, well, I got the principle of the matter and I will not stop to fight until justice comes. So therefore, in 1962, the political arena came to an action, and we supported Walter Richter from Gonzales Spring Foundation. And in 11 counties, Mr. Bartram used to hire a charter bus to take some Mexican-American voters in his behalf. But when they got down to Floresville, Texas, the business people in those little towns would tell them, look here, there's a resolution from Mr. Zamora and Mr. Armando Pineda, and you people might as well get the hell out of this place of business because we are not going to endorse a damn thing you're telling us to do about Mr. Ray Bartram. So get the hell out of this place of business and they will be run off. When the election time came, Mr. Bartram lost by 3,000 votes in 11 counties. And we were very proud that he lost the election. And about 5 years later, he kicked the bucket. He's a dead man. But therefore, he had one single Mexican man went to his funeral because we had the feeling that the men were very much against us, and therefore he was defeated. He was no longer a state representative. He didn't make it to be our next senator. Walter Richter won the election by 3,000 votes.
Were you a member of PASO?
I was a member of PASO.
Those were those years, no?
Yes, sir.
Were you part of Eva Kennedy Clubs?
Yes, sir.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Who came to organize that and who came to organize LULAC here
The LULAC was organized in the 1940s by Mr. Steve Lopez and two Gonzalez brothers that they would pitch in a scholarship fund of $50 each. So there was literally in the 1940s a scholarship fund in lieu of LULAC to help out the Mexican-American students. Then when the Viva Kennedy Club came around, we were known because of the troubles we had. Some people didn't care to come to this county because it was a lost cause. They figured we would never get organized, we would never vote. But yet, when trouble started, when the political arena came by, they would look to the leadership. Therefore, we were able to accomplish a political arena. We were able to start getting Mexican-American police officers. We started working with the schools, trying to get representation. And in the school system, we were told we had to be light-complected, green eyes, and no accent. And maybe we could start hiring some Mexican-American teachers. So this is how they gave us this is how we felt about the system that were very much against us. But yet, in the years of integration, we felt that we had a long-term school with a 99% Mexican-Americans and maybe 1% black and maybe 0.5% Anglo. And that was the Cedar Choppers, the ones that were entitled to go to long-term school. But that was basically a Mexican school. So therefore, from 1960 to 1966, we continue to hear complaints of students that wanted to be transferred to a 40, 60 Anglo-American and Mexican-American school so that the children could understand the culture and be able to speak more English. Therefore, we were rejected until 1966. An incident happened with my son, Reynaldo Zamora. There were six children that wanted to get transferred from the all-Mexican school to a Carcer school. Out of the six children, there were two Anglo-American students and four Mexican-American students. When the decision came, only my son was rejected from going to Carcer. Therefore, in 1966, I brought in the FBI complaint, I brought in health, education, and welfare, and I brought in the news media, and we blew this down into headlines as to what was the problem we were confronted in New Braunfels. I was told that I didn't give enough time. They couldn't understand my language, so therefore I should have been a good boy and obey the rules and the policies of the school board. And I told them to go to hell. I wasn't going to do it, and I wasn't going to rest until justice came. And I told them I'd fight this case all the way to the Supreme Court if I had to. So therefore we started with the help of Lulax, the help of Maldaf, and the help of 8 Mexican-American families and 2 black families, we were able to instigate a suit brought in by Maldaf out of San Antonio, Texas. This was a grant that was given by the Ford Foundation of $3.5 million, so therefore there was money to fight the battle. We lost the case in 1972 by a federal judge, Adrian Spears, and when we lost the suit, my tears came down. I was very much depressed by what happened, but our attorney from Maldaf told us, don't worry about it, Mr. Zamora, we'll take it to the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans. Therefore, the news media picked it up. They had an interview in San Antonio. They had an interview with a Mexican fellow that told them, she was interviewed and asked, what do you think about the Zamora versus the independent school district fight in New Braunfels? Well, what do you expect from a really white judge that goes golfing with the opposite lawyers? So then Maldaf asked me, Mr. Zamora, did you give this kind of statement to the news media? And I told my Maldaf attorneys, I didn't have time to find out what in the hell the judge was doing with golfing, with whatever it was. I had enough trouble to take care of my own little business. I had a service station and we're raising a family, so I didn't have time to find out what the hell the judge was doing. So therefore, they went ahead and took us into the New Orleans. We appealed it. In 1975-76, the reversal came by, and that's the reason we have busted up to date. It was ordered by federal court that for 5 years we had to have integration by busing. And after the 5 years were up, the own principals from the school refused to go back to the old system. They stated what we had done was the best thing that ever happened to this town. So at the present time, we still have busing, and the kids get along a lot great. We have integrated more Mexican-American leaders as far as teachers, counselors, but yet we're not up to par yet. We only have about 50-50 of the high school is composed of Mexican-American students, but when it comes to the teaching profession, we have less than 10% of the teaching profession in the high schools. And that goes all the way from, except for janitors, we got plenty of janitors, but we don't have no counselors, not enough to have role models for our communities. We're still complaining that the system has changed, but not enough.
Well, you also did not have school board members, and you did something about that.
Okay. We happened to have Mr. Ismael Garza, the first member of 1973 that was elected. And when we lost the battle in 72, we appealed it to the Fifth Circuit. The decision came back in 75, and he was the only dissenting board member that refused to take the case to the Supreme Court. He stated that he had a chance, a Mexican chance, to get elected or to win the fight against us because we were right and what we were doing. So therefore, that ended the fight because we had Ismael Garza to state that they didn't have a chance to win the battle in federal court in the Supreme Court. After that, we had myself running as a school board member for 10 years, and I was qualified as an unsuccessful candidate. I was told I was a very paranoid person. I was always running for school board, but I never got to first base until we got the single member district, and that is when I was able to get elected against an Anglo 2-1 on that battle. Therefore, we have had representation school board since the early 1980s. 1975, my Garza, I came in 1984, got elected, and therefore we do have representation in the school board.
You served for 10 years?
I served for 8 years.
8 years.
8 years. Then my daughter Sylvia Zamora Sanchez took over, and she got re-elected about 2 years ago, 1993. This year she got elected.
We will interview her in just a minute.
Okay.
How about a few biographical bits of information? When you were born, where, your parents' names, your brothers, sisters, your early childhood?
I was born in Piñitas, Texas. Piñitas, Texas is the oldest city in the whole U.S. except in Augustine, Florida. But this town is composed of about 200 families. I was able, in those years, there was World War II going on, when I had a project to have 9 war bonds. I was able to buy oranges from the surrounding school districts that would come to our little school, and I would sell them to the teachers. So by 1941 to 45, I was able to buy 9 war bonds. So I made the headlines in our little town that Aguinaldo Zamora helped win the war. And there was my paper, there was my picture in the paper, stating my willingness to contribute to this great country of ours. So I left the valley in 1951. I went in the U.S. Air Force from 1952 to 56. I came back to New Braunfels, and I still seeing problems in our system. And we started to get organized in the Lulac Council 155.
Excuse me. Why did you come to New Braunfels? You left from Peñitas, but you ended up settling in New Braunfels. Did you get married, or was a business opportunity, or what?
We had an aunt in New Braunfels by the name of Otilia Zamora, and we had a great dinner by the name of Felix Garza, who was the father of Ismael Garza. He had a little store by the name of Barry Fruitstand. So in 1951 to 52, I worked for him. I got to meet the man in 1950 for 2 hours, and in 51 he was killed in a car accident. But people start remembering him. After I came back from the service in 57, I would go to beer joints, and I would always hear the same story. Mr. Felix Garza was a great man. We'll never have another leader like Mr. Felix Garza. The same dwelling over Mr. Garza. And in my days of seeking for justice, I would say, you know what that man done? That man opened a door for somebody else to push it a lot harder than he could. So therefore, I got involved in doing something about the example of Mr. Felix Garza, who was always an instigator for justice, a man that was always fighting the system. He was a businessman, well-respected, well-liked by the Mexican-American community. So therefore, I thought I could follow his footsteps and try to set a good example for this community. So that is when I got involved in doing something about the Camp Warning incident, the Zander Park incident, where we were told that we were not allowed service in Camp Warning in the early 40s. So therefore, my son, Johnny Zamora, who passed away in 1984 in a car accident, he happened to be at Zander Park with another friend of his, another Mexican-American kid, and he was told by a park ranger that they were not welcome to go swim at the little bridge that was the only place that was free for kids to enjoy themselves, because the elephant ears were being hurt by the young kids swimming along the river. So therefore, I made it a test case. I went before the city council, and I told them how I felt about being embarrassed, and the family came to visit us, and we went to camp, to Zander Park, and we were refused service. My son and that little kid were refused service. They couldn't go swimming, that little puddle there. So therefore, we brought in the FBI to come in, and we tested the place. I told the chief of police and the city council that I was going to break the ordinance. A poor old lady that stated a resolution that we could not swim on the little puddle that was free. So therefore, I told him I was going to break the ordinance, and I told the chief of police he was welcome to arrest me and put me in jail if he could, because I was going to break the ordinance. So therefore, we did have 25 men, women, and children, along with Councilman Alvaro Garza and Jack Kyle, that went along with the march. While we were walking, we had a reporter interview us, and the reporter, I had a sign with me that stated, those that make peaceful revolution impossible would make violent revolution inevitable. That was John F. Kennedy. Well, they took a picture of me from behind, so therefore the sign was not read. Therefore, I went and got Channel 5 from San Antonio, a reporter, a black reporter by the name of Melvin Epps. Mr. Epps came by at 10 o'clock in news, and it was a big headline, racial tension breaks out in New Braunfels. There it was, like another Samoa with his 25 men, women, and children on this march. Well, the very next day, Mr. Melvin Epps was shipped away from San Antonio Express News. He was sent back to Houston, where he belonged. So therefore, I had never seen Mr. Melvin Epps no longer. Then came the Savage case, an incident that happened with a trial that was done by 11 Anglo members and one Mexican-American man that was in the jury. And in this jury, what happened was a soldier came to work fast, and therefore he was so drunk, he was driving a VW. There was a Sauceda family that were walking along Highway 81 in New Braunfels, and they were all killed by this drunk driver. So therefore, we started a demonstration, we started a picket line where the jury was taking place. We started at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we lasted until 5 o'clock at night for 30 solid days, complaining about the system of giving the soldier a 5-year probation. We said it wasn't fair, it wasn't right, so therefore we went ahead and had a retrial, and he was given 10-year probation, and he was given the expense of the funeral service. That's all the Sauceda family got. The whole system was he paid the funeral service for five bodies that were killed in that incident. So we were very much impressed by it. We had an interview by CBS from New York. They wanted to question me if I had any Fidel Castro ideas, if I was a communist. And I told them, well, if the system of justice is to indoctrinate that we have to picket and march and demonstrate to see justice done, then I must follow Fidel Castro's ideas, which I live in a great country with freedom of speech, we could say what we want to, and yet we are seeing that if you kill a Mexican, you get 99 years, you get a 10-year probation, but if you have a fight amongst one another, you get 99 years in the federal penitentiary. And this is an example of a Mexican-American being tried for an attempted murder case. He got 99 years in the federal penitentiary, yet Mr. William Schrader, who is the district attorney, gave an Anglo-American 10 years probation. So we were uproared, we felt the discrimination, we told CBS that New Braunfels was a place where Mexican was very cheap, they could get away with killing anybody and get a 10-year probation.
What year was that?
That was in 1983, 84, when the incident happened. More or less in those years.
What were your parents' names and where did they come from?
My dad was Agustin Zamora. He came in from the lower Rio Grande Valley. My mother was Rosa Garza Zamora. My dad didn't go to school one single day of his life, but he was able to give us an honor of having 220 acres of land. He gave me some advice to always be careful when I sign a documentation, because his mother had lost 900 acres of land when he deeded the property to the sheriff of Hidalgo County in lieu of getting my grandfather out of jail because he had killed an Anglo boss that was involved in a labor dispute with my uncle. So therefore, my grandmother, Romola Garza Zamora, deeded away 900 acres of land with the understanding that my grandfather was incompetent. He wasn't able to stand trial, but yes, he lost 900 acres of land that we used to own in the valley, at the lower Rio Grande Valley, Hidalgo County.
Well, you then stayed in New Braunfels and you married. And you've had children. Why don't you tell me about your wife and who she is, where she comes from, and the children you've had and their names.
My wife came in from La Jolla School. She graduated from La Jolla High School. She was a resident of La Jolla, Texas. And I used to travel to the valley, and I told her if she wanted to marry me, she was coming to a town where it was very much prejudiced, that we would have an uphill battle trying to see justice being done. So she was well aware where we came from, and we came to this town, she started to work for Mr. Raymond Bartram in the early 1959 to 1960. She stayed about 3 months and she went back to the valley. She had to go back to work up there at the immigration department. So we started a little business store in New Braunfels. Mr. Passanani was in the school board. Therefore, we rented the place from him from 57 to 60. So therefore, we were doing business as Little Texas Grocery Store. Then we went into 1960. We started a service station business. My sister stayed at the Little Texas, and I went in and started my service station business. So while I was in business, I was confronted with all kinds of problems of discrimination. I was looked upon as a so-called leader of this community, trying to fight for the things that were wrong, and I would stand up, and I would come up against city council, I would stand up against the county commissioners, I would stand up against the system to let them know that what they were doing wasn't right. At that time, we had the Lule Council 155, and the help of MALDEF and the help of San Antonio that was very much instrumental in fighting a boycott that was done at the beer distributors. At that time, in the 1960s, they would not hire a Mexican-American truck driver, so we fought for, we boycotted the Lone Star School, the Lone Star Pearl Brewery, the Grand Pies and the Southern Select. Those three breweries were boycotted by the members of New Braunfels, and with the help of 12 business people that boycotted the beer, we were able to see justice done. We were able to see a truck driver driving to our business places, but we didn't quit until we had representation in all the three beer distributor we had in town. So we threatened to go to court, we threatened to go to San Antonio, boycott San Antonio, so therefore we were able to succeed in the struggle of hiring Mexican-American bus drivers. The only place that a Mexican-American was hired was a Lone Star distributor. They were good enough to clean the shit from the monkeys that they had there. That was the only representation we had for those years. So therefore we boycotted the Lone Star, the Turns to that and went by brewery until we won the fight.
What was the Lone Star Brewery doing with monkeys?
Okay, they had a hobby of creating monkeys, and the Mexican was able to clean the shit from the monkeys.
When did you start your bail bond business?
The bail bond business was started by three lawyers and a banker. We started the business in 1978. I had already won the school suit, so they thought I would be a good representative to see that we had more business. I lasted with the easy bail bond for 10 years of my life. I was doing 75% of the work. And one time we talked about a real estate transaction. They excluded me from that meeting. They told me they were going to talk about a transaction that I wasn't welcome. So that made me very upset. I came to an attorney by the name of Nacho Campos, and I showed him my contract I had with Easy Bail Bond. And I told Mr. Campos, I'm afraid that I have to be out of business for 2 years before I can come back and be on my own. Mr. Campos advised me, go ahead and open up your own business, and if you get into any legal battles, we'll go ahead and start with it, and I'll defend you if you go to court. So my wife and I, Cristina and Aguinaldo Samuel, started ANC Bail Bond in 1986. We started the business, and we have been very successful in running the business. That have educated two of my daughters. My son has graduated, Aguinaldo Samuel graduated, and is making a good living. He went ahead and went 10 years to school, went to UT in San Antonio, was able to graduate. She's doing a great job at Gun Chevrolet as a service writer. My daughter Sylvia has just graduated from TLU in Seguin. She is enrolling in St. Mary's University. My oldest daughter, Rose, is 22 years old. She wants to be the next superintendent of schools of New Braunfels. She's got a challenge to see that the system can work. If we work from within the system, we can make it work, so we intend to do something about it in the 2100th century.
If you had not been in business for yourself, in the grocery store, and the gas station, and the bail bond business, you think you would have been as effective as you have been?
In those years, I was really fighting the principle of the matter. My friend would come to me and told me, "Are you afraid of what you're doing?" I said, "Afraid of what?" We have seen injustices for too many years. We have seen the death of my son, and we have survived the death of my son, so therefore nothing could scare me that they were going to do any wrong to me, because I had the protection of the FBI. They were looking after me, make sure that I was, my civil rights weren't violated, so therefore I feel very confident to be a businessman thinking about raising a family, bringing up a business, and doing what I had to do to bring justice to this town of New Braunfels. I've done the best I could. I got all my family together. I told them, if anything happens to me, I want you to tell this community that I tried to get to home base, but if I only made it to first base, I was very much satisfied in setting them an example that someday we would make the home run, and this is what we expect to do in the 21st century. The 21st century is coming up.
He gets very, I get too emotional. Yes.
Why do you do what you do?
I remember my father. I remember what he used to tell me, always analyze, always think of what you're doing, and if you think it right, you fight for the cause, you die for the cause, or you survive for the cause. So I guess I have survived because I have a clear conscience. I have done for the good sake of my family, of my community, and of my people, that we shall see justice done for all. I don't think nobody higher than my son that was rejected from that school. I don't think it's no better and no less than anybody else that went through the system. So therefore, I continue to see that there's a problem. I'm willing to advise the best I can, but I want to see that person that has a problem be up front, and I'll be right behind him. There was a time that I would hit the wall and bounce back, but I was an instigator of justice, and I didn't care how it came, as long as I didn't lose nobody, I didn't steal from nobody, I would fight the system with all my efforts to see that justice had been done, and that I will continue to do it until the day of my death. But I will continue to fight for what is right, for this great country of ours, for the benefit of all the struggling, of all the suffering that has been done. I continue to see that we can make it, we can make the difference if we get involved inside the system.
You told me the story of Alvaro Garza, who asked what was the secret of being able to live in this most racist town in the country, New Braunfels. What was that story?
Mr. Alvaro Garza was the director of the community council, and the year we struggled to have a little community credit union for the help of helping our people out. Mr. Garza was instrumental in being director of the community council of New Braunfels, Texas. So then he got the opportunity to get a job as an interpreter for the U.S. Armed Forces. Mr. Alvaro Garza went to El Paso, Texas when the Savage case was taking place, and he was interviewed by the reporters of El Paso, Texas. And he was told, what does it take to stay in New Braunfels and see the injustices that are being done, and yet people will refuse to leave the town and stay in New Braunfels? Mr. Alvaro Garza was able to answer back. It's very easy and very simple to give you an answer. In the morning you eat 8 eggs, at noon you eat 8 eggs, and at supper time you eat 8. Because that is what it takes to stay in New Braunfels. Muchos huevos, to stay and suffer the consequences of being a good Mexican-American fighting for an American dream that will never go away until justice comes in our community and in the whole nation that we live in.
Is there anything else you want to add about some incident or some issue or some thoughts? You know, why you're not as active as you are now? Anything you want to say? Because I want to switch them to Ms. Zamora.
If I was in the school board system, my first thought is when I went to an executive meeting, the first order of the agenda, I told them, okay, I have been part of the problem, now I want to be part of the solution. In those years, we had no more than 15 Mexican-Americans in the system. That's from janitor all the way up to counselors. So therefore, after 8 years of serving the school board, I was able to accomplish 55 openings of professional people all the way from janitors to counselors in the system. Then I got sick, I got nervous depressed, and my daughter was able, Sylvia Zamora Sanchez, was able to take over. And I'd like to hear from her point of view on the education field. Also, I'd like to hear from Dr. Carlos Campos.
All right, well then, thank you, Mr. Zamora. I'm going to switch, as you suggest, to your daughter, who has replaced you, or at least got elected to the school board. So we'll just pause till I move the camera.